Hey folks, this is John. Welcome back to another episode of Talk to Me in the Car, a podcast about all things teaching related and education inspired that I literally record right here in my vehicle on my drive back from work as a high school instructional coach. Today, we're talking all about distance learning in a hybrid model or a high flex model or whatever the buzzword of the day is, and how to show up for our kids in a way that will help them feel safe and supported even if we're not physically there with them in the classroom. Certainly a lot to cover today. We'll get to that in a second, but first things first, if you want to hear more, a new podcast drop every Monday, give or take, and if you like what you're hearing, feel free to like or subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. If you leave a comment or rating, it helps other people find the podcast, so that would be cool. Feel free to do that. In addition, I'm available on Twitter, and I'll talk at all times about anything teaching related because I love this stuff. So let's talk on Twitter at MeehanEDU. That's Meehan like my last name and EDU like teaching because I love teaching and I want to get better at it each and every day. So let's talk. Or you can head to my website, which is www.edadrenalinerush.com, like adrenaline with an E, educational ed adrenaline. Because I am fired up to teach, and I'm all about sharing whatever templates I can, resources I can, things that can help you change the game in your classroom. I wrote a book. It's called Game Changing Student Engagement by Theme Parks, Mud Runs, and Escape Rooms. And the big heading is Ed Adrenaline Rush. So check it out. It's available wherever books are sold. And you can check it out on the intranets. Speaking of the intranets, today I want to talk about how we can get our students engaged in our classes, even if we're going the distance, right? Even if you're doing it from far away. If you're doing it in a space where you are not in the physical room with your kids, but you're still dialing in, checking in, saying, hey, good morning, hey, how's everybody? I have a handful of like teaching tips and strategies and hacks that are probably nothing that's going to change your world, but it might just be enough to spark some curiosity, spark some creativity, spark some cleverness, and help you feel like there's a little bit more dynamism than throwing pitches to, you know, an empty batter's box. I think that's hard. So much of teaching is relational, and reading the room, and reading the kids in the room, and reading the learners in the room, and asking them questions, and just being present when they give you whatever their answers are. It doesn't really matter what they're saying. It's that they're giving voice, and they're explaining, you know, hey, here's what I'm thinking. Here's why I'm thinking it. Here's my opinion on that thing. You know, I think it was an early teaching training that I went to. They said, ask a warm-up question where you say, Coke or Pepsi? I'm like, I'm really upset about that as a teacher. I'm like, what, why? That has nothing to do with my content, my precious, precious content. And they're like, it doesn't matter. Like, whether they say Coke or whether they say Pepsi, they have an opinion. And then immediately, wherever they place themselves on that continuum, you ask them to defend themselves. Like, if a child says, I don't like Coke or Pepsi, I want Dr. Pepper. It's like, okay, well, Dr. Pepper, see, that's not on this list. So now you have to make a case for why should Dr. Pepper be on this list, right? Or like, oh, I don't drink soda at all. I drink water. Okay, tell me why. Because there's got to be a why for it. And so much of what good teaching is at all levels is metacognition. It's why did you say what you said? Let's put our work out there in a place that it's visible so other people can see it. And let's spend some time defending and explaining and like justifying or offering rationales for. Like in a small way, that can get students ready for very big things. Whether that's a science class where they have to walk through multiple steps of a research project or like a lab report. Whether that's a math class where they have to show their work in a multi-step solution where there's, you know, carrying of numbers and integers and adding and subtraction, you know, like my dear Aunt Sally in the right order. Whether that's an English class where they have to, you know, defend or present an analysis or an argument. You know, here's what I think and here's why I think it. Reasons 1, 2, and 3 and so on and so forth. Even a history class. Like, here is the real news. Here is the fake news. I've vetted these credible sources and based on these firsthand accounts, my expert opinion is, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's so important. And I think that's a hard thing to do in a digital space because so easily we fall into the stage or sage on the stage model where we end up talking at our kids again. Like, well, I only have X number of minutes on those online classes if you're doing it. Like in my school, for example, Mondays for us is a 25-minute online, sort of like a tee-up class that sets the week up. And then through the course of the week, we see each student group for about 80 minutes in person. Some of my students are still full distance, so I'll take those as Zoom calls. But it's a challenge because I know I'm only going to see them for 80 minutes in class, let's say on a Tuesday, and I only have Mondays 25 minutes to get them ready for that 86-minute class. So where I used to see my students 43 minutes every day, now over the course of 2 days, I'm seeing them for like 2.5 classes, and they're kind of on their own for the other stuff. So you feel the need to like cram 10 pounds of stuff in a 5-pound bag. And what ends up happening is actually is to the detriment of both the student and the teacher. So I'm talking about distance learning tips, you know, and I think this is something I tell my teachers when I'm working as a coach. Like, don't Don't try to do what you would have done before, because this is different. It's like when you're on Facebook and you see an ad that was clearly designed for Facebook, but then you go over to Pinterest or Instagram or Twitter and you see that same ad pop up. Pinterest is different. It's designed to be a more visual platform. Twitter is different. It's designed to be a faster-paced platform, right? Instagram is different. It's designed to be a more dynamic platform. Facebook is designed as like a fan page or like, you know, links and resources, websites, embedded videos. Twitter is designed to be scrolled through faster. You know, Instagram is more like TikTok, where it's pictures and videos working together and in tandem. And you have to develop native content for each of these unique platforms. Otherwise, people will feel like what they got was like a retrofit, and that will make you and them both feel kind of like you're just going through the motions. I think it's important I say over and over again, like, don't think about what this class should have been back in the day before a pandemic. Like, I tell my teachers, like, working on, like, give yourself grace and, you know, presume best intentions of all parties involved. Don't worry about what it should have been. Let's think about what you want it to be. I was working with a teacher yesterday in Ohio, and they said they were designing a lesson plan. And in the lesson plan, they were concerned because they wanted to do some fun, playful gaming elements. Like, that's amazing. Like, but we can't do stuff like having Legos in the classroom. We can't do stuff like having poker chips that the students collect. We can't do things like, you know, getting up and tagging in and hopping to the next station and so on and so on and so forth. And I said, okay, so don't do that. Do this instead. Like, what do you want your students to feel in that class? Think about one feeling a day. And again, as a distance learning tip goes, that's actually a really powerful almost like a sourdough starter that can get you through so much of your lesson planning. Don't focus on what you want people to do. Focus on what you want them to feel. In today's class, I want my students to feel a sense of awe. We're studying a major historical event. I want them to be impressed by the size and scope and grandeur of this. Okay, great. Or maybe in this class, I want them to feel a sense of curiosity. Like, hey, this is a riddle we're trying to solve. And we only have 21 minutes left to do it. Like, giving them the chance to feel like they are almost like a character in a video game. The adventure is beginning when they walk in the room. Welcome back, heroes. This is our work ahead of us for the day. Or you now entered the Hall of Wonders or the Cave of, you know, inspiration, whatever it is. I think that's really important. And I think playful learning, you know, game-based learning, gamification can do a lot of maybe some of the heavy lifting there to just help string these things together, because it doesn't have to be a full-on out-and-out game where it's like, okay, team one against team two against team three against team four. Rather, it's if you're on team Pepsi or you're on team Coke, you have a rooting interest. So I would like to hear, why did you say team Pepsi or team Coke? Some elements where you say, hey, today we're going to have an argument in class. We're going to just pick a side, and you're going to tell me why you picked, what side you picked. They'll be performing not just for themselves, but for the authentic audience of their peers. And that's cool. That's a good thing. Because when we show up for game time, we want to be seen by the cheering crowds or the hecklers from the other side. You know, we want to kind of do our peacock strut and say, hey, this is an away game, but I'm crushing it on your turf, right? I own this house, right? I think that's a really good thing. And if you're doing that idea of the game-based or the playful, it really can help students feel, like I said, a rooting interest, a vested interest in what they're doing. So, some examples. Immediately when I start class in an online class, I'll turn the Zoom call on, I'll turn the waiting room off, and I'll turn off the waiting room maybe 5 minutes before class starts so people can start filing in. And I'll have music up in the background. I'll have the instructions for the day, like, hey, everybody, grab a sheet of paper or open a new document. Our class will begin in, and I'll have a ticking embedded clock, because games have clocks, right? You know, football is really just who can score the most points by the time the game is over. Okay, so let's do that. Tick, 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 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And that clock is visual, is clearly embedded, so it gives students a peace of mind to grab a drink, use the restroom, open a document, you know, take the trash out, whatever you need to do. But we're getting started here in 2 minutes and 22 seconds, whatever that is. Along the way, I'll be playing music in the background, because great stadiums do that, great games do that, right? The entrance music, the hype music. And I'll pick a song that has some thematic relevance to what I'm teaching that day. So, for example, last week I taught a short story called The Yellow Wallpaper, about a woman who, in the late 1800s, is put on what they call a rest cure in a big country manor, just to kind of get through a period of mental health distress. It's really a veiled critique of the asylum system of the late 1800s and the idea that we just took women and locked them up because, you know, they had the audacity to be women. So while I was playing this, I wanted my students to talk about, you know, issues of, or while I was, you know, teaching this, I wanted students to talk about issues of mental health and the idea of the things we try to do to make people better that end up making it so much worse. This patronizing that we do, quote, for their own good, we end up manipulating someone else's reality to make them believe that we have it all in our control, see? Gaslighting. And so there's a great song by the band that used to be called the Dixie Chicks, now just called the Chicks, called Gaslighter. So why not play it? I've quietly teed up a conversation about, hey, we'll talk about this today. You know, 2 weeks ago we read a short story called Sweet Potato Pie, which is set in Harlem. And it's about a living short story writer from Baltimore, Eugenia Collier, talking about the value of culture and family and food, soul food, connecting with her roots. It's not an accident that the sweet potato is the root of the vegetable. But they're also talking about connecting the roots in Harlem. And so while we're talking about, you know, going back to the roots, as a living female author from, you know, a metropolitan area. And so I picked Lauryn Hill. And I love Lauryn Hill to begin with. I should do a whole podcast on Lauryn Hill. But I played, you know, a track off of her Miseducation of Lauryn Hill album. So you can hear, like, hey, it's not just this one author who's writing about what it means to be a young black woman growing up. It's, hey, there's something about this story that kind of resonates on a much bigger level. And we're connecting this to that. Connecting text to text. Connecting text to self. Connecting text to world. This week we're reading another story, Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man, the first chapter of it, about this young black narrator who feels like he has been erased because of the lack of identity shown to black folks. And so we played a track from Macklemore, which is called, you know, White Privilege, and it's about cultural appropriation and stealing you know, the identity of people who are people of color. So that's a cool way to set the stage. And it's like, hey, before we even get started, I'm interested in, you know, just teeing it up. Then when they get there, maybe like an ESPN-style ticker on the bottom of your screen. It doesn't have to take up much space. Just four or five colored boxes that says, this is the first topic we're going to cover today. Then the second, then the third, the fourth. They can get a sense of endowed progress as they click through or as the document moves forward. And they can see, hey, I've covered two topics. There's three more to come. Or it's a hint about a signpost of something else that's down the line. But they can get that sense of, oh, there's two out of three done, or three out of five done. The sense of the class is moving forward. Along the way, embedding things like a poll question or a survey question, something like Mentimeter or Poll Everywhere. Totally seamless. Asking the question to the group, hey, who here has ever been made to feel invisible? Is racism a thing in the United States? Do we believe that people who are, you know, dealing with mental health should be, you know, treated differently than people who are dealing with physical health? Whatever these questions are. Embedding these questions, even if it's just a quick poll, so they can see they are in the majority of what they believe, or they might be that one lone voice in the wilderness. And that's a natural invitation to say, hey, who was the person who said, you know, the outlier here? Who's the one voice who dissented? I'd love to hear your thoughts. That's a brave choice. What made you say that? Like, there's no pain to that, because you're asking them to say, hey, you just told me something already. Can you tell me what made you say that something? Just like Team Coke or Pepsi. It's the same activity. It's just done virtually. I think that's so cool. And I want to encourage you and empower you as a teacher to say, give yourself those abilities to embed those Coke or Pepsi type moments. Those moments where there's no right or wrong answer, but you just want to see what your students are thinking. Hey, which of these problems do you think was the hardest, the trickiest, the weirdest, the scariest? And letting your students kind of explain their thought process back to you. That's a good thing for everybody. It helps them feel like their voice matters, and that even though they're not at the physical same space as you, they're part of that emotional space that you've created in your classroom, where it's okay to hazard a guess. It's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to take a chance to read, write, speak, and present, and all that stuff that we want them to do. Small, playful, it doesn't have to be much, but those little game-based elements really can go a long way to helping your students feel safe and supported, and that ultimately is a good thing for everybody. Till next time, stay safe, stay home, wear a mask, vote, be well, and I'll catch you back here next time. Thanks. Hit me up on Twitter. Bye for now.